back on WTPS. This is Healthy Choices, Healthy People. I'm Mark Henderson, your host from 100 Black Men of South Florida, a cooperative effort between 100 Black Men of South Florida and the American Cancer Society, the Miami-Dade unit. This is News Talk 1080 WTPS, the People Station, where information is power. If you want to find out more about 100 Black Men of South Florida, you can go to the website www.100blackmensf.org or call 305-620-2260. That's 305-620-2260. And May?
Yes, that number is 1-800-ACS-2345. That's 1-800-ACS-2345 or www.cancer.org.
And we are talking today to May Whitehead from the American Cancer Society, the community representative, and Dr. Aaron Korngrad, who is the prostate doctor up in Aventura. He does prostate surgery. I want to give our listeners some statistics here before we go back into the questioning of both folks. Prostate cancer is the second leading cause of cancer death. In the Afro-American males, with approximately 6,100 Afro-American males expected to die. This was a stat of about 5 years ago, so I'm sure that statistic has increased, unfortunately, since that period of time. Afro-American males have far higher death rates from prostate cancer than any other race or ethnic group. And this other stat that I have down here says approximately 25,300 newly diagnosed cases of prostate cancer were expected to occur 5 years ago, accounting for about 37% of all cancers diagnosed in African-American males. And although prostate cancer incidence rates are high in white males, the rate of prostate cancer in African-American males is 60%. Doc, what's the survival rate of prostate cancer? Or is there?
Most men who are diagnosed with prostate cancer seek treatment. Most are diagnosed at an early stage where treatment is effective. And most men do not die of prostate cancer. Again, early detection is the key to effective management. Most new cases today are diagnosed early, and most are cured.
Okay. What about the ones that have passed? Is that that they did not get early detection, or the cancer spread too rapidly?
Almost by definition, yes.
Okay. After you've done the test, the PSA test and the exam, and you do find out that you do have prostate cancer, give me the next steps.
Assuming that you're talking about the early stages, that you've been diagnosed at an early stage, and assuming, for argument's sake, a fairly simple situation where you are otherwise relatively healthy, the road generally forks into at least two branches, which are mutually exclusive. One is surgery, and the other is radiation. Now, each of those forks then can subdivide into more sub-forks. For example, radiation can be delivered as external radiation or as radioactive pellets, sometimes referred to as seeds. Surgery also can be done in a number of different ways. For example, one of the divisions here is open surgery versus laparoscopic surgery. In this area, we have had some fairly dramatic developments, very positive developments in the last few years. Keep in mind that historically, prostate cancer surgery has been done through an incision in the lower abdomen. This operation, known as a radical prostatectomy, has been associated in the past with a lot of bleeding and a lot of pain and substantial recoveries extending out in weeks, being measured in weeks. Approximately 7 years ago, we began to do the same operation, the same treatment, the radical prostatectomy, using minimally invasive techniques. The new operation, referred to as laparoscopic radical prostatectomy, profoundly reduces bleeding and pain, which is not only more pleasant, but also is associated with a lot less risk and a much faster recovery. I would point out that if your listeners want information about laparoscopic radical prostatectomy, they can find it on www.laprp.com. That's LAP, L-A-P as in Paul, R as in radical, P as in prostatectomy.com.
Okay. How long does each one of these procedures take?
The two forms of the operation take approximately the same amount of time and skilled hands, depending upon a number of variables, patient size, for example, prostate size, previous surgery. On average, in experienced hands, a radical prostatectomy, be it done with the historical open technique or with the newer laparoscopic technique, takes approximately 2 hours to do.
Okay. You are under or are you awake?
You do not want these awake. No. You've got to be asleep for these. No, this is done with general anesthesia.
How expensive are these procedures?
You know, I don't keep track with how much institutions charge for them, but they are both covered under insurance plans.
Okay. Megan, I'm definitely going to come back to you in a sec. I'm a male. You know, I've gone to my doctor, and before I've obviously gotten to the doctor that we have on the line today, I've been told that I've got, you know, I may in fact have, you know, I have cancer there. I need to go do some other tests. And I asked that question about, you know, how much is it going to cost me? And I find out, and I say, well, I can't afford that, or it's not covered in my plan. What's the next step?
The next step would be to call our 1-800 number, and you would be referred to patient services, and they would take over from there, and they would refer you to the appropriate source.
Okay. Are you finding a lot of males that are calling in about this, and two, how much is being referred? I mean, are there every male that calls in, are they being referred, or are they getting enough information to go on to the next step?
What I try to do, especially with my community, and that's why I'm the community representative, if you're having a problem and you feel that you're not getting that answer through that number, to call your community representative who can maybe walk you through the process a little better. So we're trying to encourage that. That's why we have community representatives. We know our community, and that's why we're out there.
Okay. I picked up the phone. I'm not getting satisfaction. I call you. Walk me through the process.
Then that's when I go back personally in the office and speak with, we have a patient service representative in the office. So I'm able to go and speak with her face-to-face and talk to her and say, look, I have this person. They don't have funds. What can we do for this person? So that's how we work that out.
Doc, after surgery is after this process is done, and you said something about radiation. Forgive me. Was that another process? You had two things you were telling me. I'm sorry, I forgot.
Radiation is a standard treatment for prostate cancer. It's an effective treatment, and that is an alternative to surgery.
Okay. How prevalent is that?
Very common.
Okay.
Radiation is applied very commonly.
Okay, more than the surgery itself?
I don't have a specific breakdown, but both are in very common use.
Okay, how long is radiation?
If you're talking about external beam radiation, which is a form that can be delivered without anesthesia, you're talking about daily visits to the cancer center for a period generally around 6 weeks.
Okay, and then what after that?
Follow-up, blood tests, physical exams.
How often?
In the beginning, probably every 3 to 6 months, and then later on, cutting back from there. The idea there is to track to make sure that the radiation worked and that the PSA has come down.
Okay. Also, too, do you recommend in terms of, you know, in terms of support groups?
Do I recommend what?
Do you recommend in terms of support groups? I mean, you've done follow-ups, but after they're coming to you, if they still have, you know, if this is an emotional thing, is there, you know, is there something else that you're recommending to them to do that will, in addition to being checked and taking medicine and so forth, help them get over this, you know, over this experience?
We have to be somewhat careful with support groups because support groups tend to attract men who are indeed experiencing what you've described, namely the emotional impact of the disease. For a man who is not in real distress, a support group can, if he's not careful, actually exacerbate the distress by feeding on itself. I'm not an expert in mental health. I am sensitive to the emotional reaction to cancer, and I talk with my patients about it all the time. As a rule, I find that getting them away from doctors and away from hospitals and more back to their routine is actually very useful to them. It minimizes the trauma. However, if they're not functioning, for example, if they're not sleeping, if they're not functioning at work, if they're not eating properly, if they're depressed, if they're anxious, and we can't help them recover with some of the means that I talked about, in other words, support and discussion, including the family members, obviously, not me, then I refer them to a psychiatrist.
How, in the patients that you do see, how often do you see the family members coming in to discuss, or are the men coming by themselves?
The patients are almost always with somebody who is supportive to them. In most cases, that's going to be the wife. With gay patients, I see their partners coming in with them. Children are often involved. In rare cases, a parent will be involved, but the wife is almost always central to the story and very, very important.
May we get back that up?
One program that we do offer, and it is offered by some qualified specialists, and that's what we call the man-to-man program. And it's an educational and support group that helps men and their families, and the key here is families, help them cope with prostate cancer. Because many times it's not just the men. It's family members also. It's children, and it's the wife. So we do offer a support group. We even offer a newsletter, and it's called Man to Man News, and it's offered through the Man to Man program. And it just helps men talk about how lifestyle changes can have an effect on prostate cancer. It gives a survivor's story. It tells about key words. So we do have a program that helps men.
Yeah, I back that up, Mark. There are lots of components to supporting these men as they're diagnosed and treated. There are formalized programs that May just described. Family is key. If the family is on your side, you're much less likely to have a problem emotionally than if they're not.
What about you know, nutrition in here, May? Do you talk about, you know, in the man-to-man program, do you talk about healthy eating? I mean, especially in certain ethnic groups, obviously amongst African Americans specifically, we have the, you know, we have the, obviously, the, you know, the weight problem and the, you know, and other things that may, in fact, exacerbate this, you know, this particular condition. How prevalent do you talk about nutrition, especially if you can't talk to the males directly? Are you feeding that into the women, and are you finding the women then in turn feeding that into the men, and it's making somewhat of a difference?
We feed it into the women. We talk about diet and exercise and how that can play a very important role in keeping prostate cancer at bay and encouraging the women. We have women, they walk. Well, you get up in the morning and go walk. Take your husband with you. Start cooking healthy meals, and we talk about healthy recipes. So we do talk about lifestyle changes.
Doc, are you finding all sizes and shapes of men coming in, you know, with the disease? I mean, is it more prevalent in heavier men or thin men or what?
I have patients of every shape, every size, every color, every everything. Prostate cancer affects everybody. It's very common.
That's interesting and unfortunate. Give me a little bit of the. You said you'd seen somebody that was like 35 or what have you. Obviously, without naming any names, give me a little bit about this particular individual.
I can tell you a lot about him. He's actually gone public with it. He was interviewed on a television show that was broadcast a couple of months ago, 3 months ago. The young man was diagnosed because he went to be checked after his older brother had been diagnosed with prostate cancer. Among the tests that he had initially was a PSA, which was approximately 5 nanograms per milliliter. That number alone is associated with a 25% chance of a positive biopsy, which is what he had, a positive biopsy. He went through surgery beautifully. As you might imagine, to be diagnosed with prostate cancer at the age of 36 is shocking.
Right.
Not surprisingly, this man had a very severe emotional reaction to it. It was very depressing. He did beautifully with surgery, as you might expect. His functions, including his erectile function, returned very quickly, partly reflecting the fact that he's very young. Erections return more slowly in older men than in younger men. And has gone back to his life. One of the most bizarre events associated with his case was when he went on television, and this was on Univision, the man speaks Spanish, and they interviewed him in Spanish. The reporter put a microphone in front of him and asked, "How did your mother feel about you having prostate cancer?" I found it startling because it is just so rare that I'm dealing with my patients' mothers. You know, prostate cancer is not a pediatric disease.
Right.
But he was kind of on the cusp. I mean, obviously he's an adult, but a very young adult. And that, to me, that single question and his reaction, the startled reaction when she asked him, really brought home to me how hard it must be for a young man to be diagnosed with prostate cancer.
What was his response?
He was stunned into silence temporarily, and then he explained to her something in very rapid Spanish that I couldn't follow. But I think the same response that I had, which was it caused him to really reflect on the absurdity almost of his situation of having prostate cancer at 36. Look, every man is upset when he's diagnosed with cancer, and obviously that applies also to prostate cancer. I do find generally that my younger patients have a harder time coping with the diagnosis than my older patients.
Why is that?
I assume it's because the younger men have different expectations from the older men. I think once you've gotten to 80 years, you've kind of seen all kinds of things happen to you, and you've made adjustments, and you've learned to cope. When you're young and the world is your oyster and nothing bad's ever happened and something bad does happen, I think you're just very surprised and it takes time to adjust.
May, are you finding in the men that you have been able to talk to, what age range? Are they in that range that Dr. Skeff is talking about?
Generally, the women that I talk to are early 30s, so 30, 35, so that would be the age of their spouse and significant others.
And, again, they're taking the information back, and you're getting a 50-50 out of that?
Correct.
That's kind of interesting. Have you talked to those that are older, that are in their 50s and 60s and 70s, and are you getting the same reaction?
That's the target group, and we generally have a problem with that group, especially older African-American men when you start talking about prostate cancer.
Have you, at any point in time, gone and the male was not in the room. He went back to the wife. The wife talked to the male, and then the male then picked up the phone and followed up with you rather than the wife coming back and following up with you?
No, I've never had that happen. No.
That's interesting. That's interesting to know. Have you talked to any cancer survivors or prostate cancer survivors?
No, I haven't. I haven't. I haven't.
Doc, what about you? I mean, have you come back, some of the guys that, you know, that you've treated and helped, have they come back and given you feedback? Have they talked about their experience? Have they, you know, said they've gone on to try to spread the word to others?
My patients are remarkable. First of all, about 95% of them are chatterboxes. They go out and talk they want to. They want to help the next guy who's in their shoes. And I can reliably ask them to take calls from a new man who's been diagnosed, and we do that all the time. It's remarkable how effective a man who has had prostate cancer treatment can be at relieving anxiety of a man who's just been diagnosed. And that's an example of targeted social support, if you will, and we can be the facilitator in many cases. I will say that the experience sometimes can be dramatic in its impact on their personal and professional behavior, and I'll give you a quick example. A number of years ago, I operated on a 39-year-old businessman with prostate cancer. He runs a small business. His story, in fact, was told also publicly recently. As you might expect, he was quite surprised, too, and had a very dramatic reaction, overcame it, had surgery, did nicely, went back to work, and began to run his company. What I discovered recently is that he changed as an executive because of his own illness. And what I mean by that specifically is that he began to make sure, much more so than before, that his employees had good health insurance. When one of his employees was diagnosed with prostate cancer, he took him almost by the hand to his consultations, checked on the insurance, talked with the administrators for the insurance, so became almost a missionary. In other words, the illness had a very dramatic impact on him. I'll give you another example. You asked me, do these men tell me about what happened with them? One of my patients is a psychiatrist. A few states north of us, up in the Carolinas. He's on staff at one of the universities up there, so he teaches psychiatry. I operated on him in 2003. In the first year, the only thing that I heard from this psychiatrist was that he was feeling fine, his PSA was basically undetectable, which was great. He was having incontinence, moderate incontinence, and no erections, whereas before surgery, he had great erections. We didn't know, obviously there's no formula and I don't have a crystal ball, we didn't know what was going to be with him. In my counsel to him then was, be patient, things are still evolving. This man is now 3 years out, and we've been tracking his case all along just because he's typical and he's been writing to me. He happens to be unusually articulate and insightful because of his professional background, and so he put it to me in medical terms, and what he described was, whereas in the first year he was suffering from some dysfunction, in the second year, his functions returned. Now, at almost 3 years, maybe around 2.5 years from surgery, he has erections the same as what he had before surgery. In fact, he says that sometimes his nighttime erections actually wake him up. In other words, here's a man who you might instinctively expect to keep his mouth zipped on some very private things,
right,
who not only shares this with his surgeon, with me, but also, in fact, has authorized me to share that information with any other man who comes through because he wants to help the next guy and says, give him my name, give him my phone number. It's not a problem. He's willing to talk about it publicly. So I find these men just incredibly expressive and generous. I think they're great. I think they're exemplary.
You're listening to News Talk 1080, WTPS, the People's Station, where information is power. This is Healthy Choices, Healthy People. I'm Mark Henderson, along with Mae Whitehead, the community representative for the American Cancer Society, and Aaron Conrad, who is a prostate cancer doctor out of Aventura. Any other examples you have, Doc?
Geez, hundreds of them. There's so many.
Give me a couple more. That's fine.
You want some stories?
Yeah, I'd be honest with you, I would love some stories. I think we're about ready to go to commercial break, but
how about a spiritual story?
That's fine.
Okay. 15 years ago, I knew a man who coached me in swimming. That's my hobby. I'm an adult regular competitive swimmer. I moved away from where he lived in Texas and moved to Florida and started up this prostate cancer surgery program. And one day, about 3 years ago, I got a phone call from a guy in Colorado who says, my father's been diagnosed with prostate cancer. Well, that's something I hear every day. And then he says, you know, he's got to get back right away. He wants an operation that won't cause him bleeding and pain because he's competing in a swim meet. Well, you know where this is going.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, it turns out this is my coach's father. He's living out in Colorado. So he comes out here, as you can imagine, not happy with the cancer, not happy with treatment, happy to have discovered laparoscopic radical prostatectomy, in other words, the minimally invasive form of prostate cancer surgery, and obviously just tickled that the man whom would be doing the surgery knows his son and is a friend of his son. This man did beautifully in surgery. 3 months later, I get a note from him saying he had just broken a world record in the 200-meter breaststroke. So that observation alone makes, obviously, a very powerful statement about the man and his dedication and his commitment to his sport, but it also really, to a great extent, reflects the merits of doing prostate cancer surgery with minimally invasive techniques, with laparoscopic techniques. Why? Because there's no way that any one of us would break a world record if somebody cuts our abdomen in half.
That part is true. Doctor, I'm going to ask you to hold on and give me your other one when we come back from break. This is Healthy Choices, Healthy People. I'm Mark Henderson, your host. You're listening to News Talk 1080 WTPS, the People's Station, where information is power. We'll be right back.